Thank you. So in order to continue, I'll assume that everybody forgot what I said yesterday. I'm looking at certain mappings here. Okay, these are a family of birational models. And there's this picture. So we have a mapping here of birational map of P2. And we have three curves, sigma naught, sigma beta, and sigma gamma. And these are the three exceptional lines. They're straight lines. This was the point E2, E1, and the point P. And sigma beta went to E2. E2 blew up to sigma 0. Sigma 0 went to E1. E1 blows up to something else. So let me take advantage of all the color here. So the curve sigma gamma goes to the point that we call Q, and in specific coordinates that's minus A, 0, and the point P is the point of indeterminacy, a point of indeterminacy, that's minus B, minus A, and these indeterminate points I'll make this brown color, okay? And you can see where everything is going to map. For instance, this point E2, where is that going to go? It's inside of sigma naught, so it wants to, so sigma naught goes to E1, so this point wants to go to E1. It's also inside of sigma beta, so sigma beta wants to go to E2, so this brown point blows up to the whole line sigma naught. So by looking at this picture, you can see where the exceptional curves go, these three exceptional lines, and you can also see where the points of indeterminacy blow up to, just by, you know, picture analysis. And last time, we defined the set Vn, which was the parameter points A, B. So these are parameters. And they were looking at the ones such that FAB takes the point Q, that's minus A0, to the nth iterate takes you to P, which is minus B minus A. Okay? So that is the special set of parameters, and the theorem last time was that FAB is an automorphism. Let me see now. What did I want to say here? I'm being a little bit loose here. If and only if AB is in Vn for some n. And that was the theorem from last time.
Hello!
Yes, I know what you're talking about, Jeff. It's Well, I didn't do the hard one. I assume the inner one is the hard one. Okay, and furthermore, part of the theorem, oh yeah, I was going to say some more here about this theorem, and the point is that we have an automorphism, and in case we have an automorphism, the dynamical degree of F is this number we're going to call lambda n, which is the largest root of the characteristic polynomial of F prime, which is chi n of t is t to the n plus 1 t cubed minus t minus 1 plus t cubed plus t squared minus 1. Okay? Now, and the point here is that if n is greater than or equal to 7, then lambda is greater than 1. So we have actually, we're in this interesting case if n is at least 7. Now let me make a proposition write down a proposition here, which is a corollary of a theorem in Jeff's talk, and that is that if T is a root, okay, so if I take a root of this polynomial, then either T is lambda, this lambda n, or lambda inverse, or modulus of T is 1. Okay? In other words, he was saying that when you're looking at the eigenvalues of F star, there's a unique one bigger than 1, and if we want to, so that means there's going to be a unique 0 bigger than 1, so it has to be lambda. What about the other things? Well, if we take the inverse for an automorphism, you know, all these things work out correctly, look like nice mathematics for automorphisms. So this means we can also apply the same thing to the F star for the inverse, and that tells us that all the roots, there's only one root less than 1, and that'll have to be lambda inverse, and everybody else has modulus 1. And so we can then write, we can factor then chi as being something cyclotomic times the, this will be chi n, will be something, some cyclotomic factors times this, and this is the minimal polynomial of lambda, okay? And I should say that this tells us then that in terminology, this is a Salem polynomial. Now, this is sort of reviewing from last time. Now we can maybe go forward a little bit. I would like to... So here, last time we were very focused on the question of when do you have an automorphism or not. Let me just suppose... Let's go back just to consider this as a birational map. Okay, I'm just going to look at this as a birational map, and I want to discuss a little bit about the dynamics. Okay, in other words, what behaviors do you see? Well, I mean, I don't know what behaviors you're going to see in the end, but I mean, just a couple of behaviors to get started with. So, is there an invariant curve? And by invariant curve, I mean an invariant curve S, which means that I can look at S, I take away the indeterminacy locus, okay, so I'm looking at where the mapping is well defined, and I want to have this thing being inside of S, okay? So if I, so is there an invariant curve, okay? And in fact, conjecturally, most FA, well, let me see. Let me just, I don't need to say any conjecture right now. So there's a theorem that answers this question. You can find that there exist rational functions psi 1 from C to C. So this is into parameter space. Okay, there are three functions, psi 1, psi 2, and psi 3, that you can write down quite explicitly. The third one is easiest to write down. The third one, the most explicit, is 1 plus T, T minus T inverse. Any other two would take about this much space. But anyway, there are three rational functions, and the property is that there exists an invariant curve SAB for FAB if and only if AB is equal to F to psi j of t for some t and some j. Okay. So there's so in fact you're looking at parameter space. So this is maybe the A axis and the B axis. We're looking through here, and I want to focus on the case J equals 1. Okay, let me just consider the case J equals 1. And so I'm going to have some curve. Okay, this will be the curve psi 1 of C inside of my parameter space. Let's see if I have said everything I want to say. Okay, so what would a picture look like here before I draw the picture? Okay, sorry, I didn't work out enough. So, facts. Okay. First fact, this takes a little bit of proving. This is not, I mean, this takes more than a page of proving, but SAB is cubic. Okay. And so, in other words, for mappings like this, if there is an invariant curve, the invariant curve is a cubic. And the you can wonder about the 1, 2, and 3 of the psi 1, psi 2, and psi 3. J is the number of irreducible components. Okay. And the possibilities are you could have that three components. You could have that's two components, and you could have one component, and a guy's got to have a cusp. Okay, so those are the three possibilities. Okay, so let me draw a picture. So, let me see now. I have to get ready with two hands before I'm going to see if I can lift this guy. I don't know. Oh, I see. Okay. All right. So what is a invariant curve going to look like? Well, it's going to be a cubic. It has to go through all these points of indeterminacy. So I want to focus here on the case J equals 1, so I'll just make something connected. And this guy here, someplace, is going to have a cusp, and then it'll gum off and join there. So the point is here, we're going to have a fixed point. I'll call singular fixed point. We'll have some other fixed point someplace, regular fixed point. And you can see, I missed it. Sorry. Bad aim. Okay, this is Q. Q is right there. Okay. Why do I know that Q has to be in the invariant curve? Well, if I look at the curve of the line sigma gamma, it's going to intersect in three points. Two of these points are going to be the points of indeterminacy, and the rest of the line is going to go through Q. So I know I've got one more point here, this point has to go to Q. Okay? In this particular situation, I've got three points of indeterminacy. Since I have a birational mapping, I have no idea, what's happening on the curve. I mean, so here we go. So I know all these points are on the curve. Yes. So
when J equals 3, you get some special elliptic surface, right?
Three lines.
J equals 1, I'm sorry. J equals 1.
It's a cubic with a cusp. Surface. Yes.
What is this elliptic surface?
You took my question out of my mouth. Okay. So let me say here, there exists two fixed points. I'm going to just write down what I said here. There exists two fixed points. FP, the singular one at the cusp, the fixed point regular in S, okay? So to answer your question here, there exists a uniformization H from P1 to this curve, okay? So it's a rational curve, just a cubic with a cusp. And we can do this such that h of 0 is going to be the fixed point that's singular, the cusp point. And h of infinity is going to be the other fixed point. Okay? And on... let me just move this over a little bit here. I'm going to look at inside of P1, I have some parameter I'll call zeta. Okay? So I'm going to choose my parameter so that, okay, like this. So here I can look at the mapping zeta goes to t zeta. So on my, so in other words, my invariant curve is parameterized by P1, and on the curve I'm just looking at scaling. Zeta goes to t zeta, and here I'm looking at the mapping f. Okay. So, yeah, you. Sure.
So, were you asking whether or not there's a holoelliptic operation here?
Yeah, but because his cubic thing has been rendered, so he divides the whole projective line.
Well, let me, no, sorry. This is the unique curve. Sorry. There exists an invariant curve, and if there is any invariant curve at all, it has to be a cubic. This is the only invariant curve.
But they all have singularity. You don't get any elliptic curve.
No. You don't get something non-singular. Let me see now. I'm trying to check my notes to make sure I don't get off and go on to some interesting new direction. So next thing that's sort of a just a inspection kind of calculation, you can take the differential of your map at this singular fixed point. Okay? In other words, the singular fixed point, your tangent space is funky. It's a singular point. So in fact, this behavior determines the differential of f at that point, and this is going to be equivalent to some linear map that's the linear map t squared t cubed. Okay. So we have something here. Now, I want to consider a condition here, standard condition. Let me, and this is not a optimal condition, but it's good enough for me at the moment. So let me look at this condition that there exists an epsilon, there exists an m, such that t to the j minus 1 is greater than epsilon over t to the m for all, oh, sorry, j to the m for all j equals 1, 2, 3, etc. Okay? This is a Diophantine condition. Okay? And so there's a linearization theorem. Okay? Which says that if star holds, there exists some holomorphic mapping. Starting off like the identity plus higher order terms. And I can look at C2 over here, fixed point being the origin. And I'm going to look at the linear map L. I have my mapping capital Phi coming over here. And the origin goes to the fixed point. And so it's defined in some neighborhood, taking it to some neighborhood. And there is a phi that's linearizing things. So here is f. And so we have that L followed by phi is the same as f of phi. Okay? So in other words, if you have a Diophantine condition, and so in particular, if p has modulus different from 1, you've got it for sure. And the only tricky point is if t has modulus equal to 1, well, if t has modulus equal to 1, it might hold or it might not hold. But in this case, okay, any root of psi n satisfy star. Okay, just a theorem of number theory. Okay, very non-trivial theorem of number theory, but if you have roots of this thing, so they're either one lambda inverse, modulus not one, or else they're not, these are not roots of unity. So in this factorization, you pulled all the roots of unity out. So
is this picture correct that when you have the image of psi 1, which is a curve, and then you have a line bundle over it, right? You have the P1 bundle, but with two fixed points, so you have a line bundle over it. And then the F acts on the fibers.
Let me see. Over here, this is the curve. This is the dynamical curve. This is the curve in parameter space.
The curve psi 1.
In parameter space.
Yeah. Parameter
okay.
Space. So mm-hmm. curve. And then mm-hmm. at every point, there is a P1 above it, which is the normalization of this invariant curve F.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you have two fixed points.
But the fixed points are on this in this picture. Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. On F mm-hmm. also, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you have this P1 bundle over the image of psi 1, and it's a P1 bundle with two fixed points. Then it means that there is a line bundle.
Okay.
And then your realization is that the F action on the line bundle actually is this multiplication. Is that correct? Or?
I don't know. I never thought about that, actually.
So what is the curve, which is the image of psi 1, because you have a line bundle over it?
Let me see. Well, look at
you
psi...
Right, that's long. Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't thought about that. Let me try to do something I have thought about. So we get a linearization here, okay? So what this tells you then for these rational mappings, if T is less than 1, okay, there exists a basin of attraction for this fixed point. Suppose that's not wonderful notation, but this fixed point here will have some basin, attracting basin. Okay. So there will be some domain of attraction going on. And what's happening here, the point is that on the invariant curve, everything is going to be attracted except the other fixed point. So you know you've got the whole invariant curve except the other fixed point. Okay? In other words, S minus the regular fixed point, it's all inside the basin. And in fact, McMullen showed that the complement has zero volume, so this thing has full volume. Okay? And it also applies in the case when you have an automorphism, in this case where your T happens to be lambda, okay, or rather lambda inverse, then you have a basin of attraction of full volume. And and so this tells you, okay, so this tells you as a corollary, if F is an automorphism with an invariant curve, you either have, there exists a basin of full volume. Okay, so if you have lambda inverse as your choice, you have an attracting basin. If you have lambda, it's a repelling basin. But in either case, you have a basin of full volume, or you have a rotation domain. Okay, in other words, some invariant set where the mapping is conjugate to a rotation. Okay. So, let me go... So this finishes what I wanted to say about this family. And so what about other maps? So let me just... write down two different families. So one family is this. Now, what are my coefficients here? C, I want C to be 2 cosine of m pi over n, where I'm going to choose some m between 1 and n, and relatively prime. Okay? And so the theorem is for any choice of A1 through AK minus 1, call this F sub A, okay, in complex numbers, and any choice of M and N like this, FA is an automorphism. Okay, so what do I mean by that? What I mean is that there is some surface XA obtained by blowing up P2 and this original mapping FA down below lifts up here to an automorphism. So in other words, what I mean by saying it's an automorphism, it's a birational model of some automorphism sitting over it. Okay. And what can I say a little bit more about this thing? Let me not say, unless you want me to, let me mention. So the point here is that this shows that, in fact, see, with this, sorry, I forgot another theorem I was going to do with that. I knew there was something missing that I was going to do. Sorry. Let me return here. Right. There was some reason why I was writing down this chi a little bit more thorough. You might have wondered why I'm being so thorough about writing down this characteristic polynomial, since, you know, characteristic polynomials are just characteristic polynomials. The last thing I wanted to say here, we're looking here at mappings with invariant curves. Okay. Now, I was talking here about if F is an automorphism, okay, does that case actually occur? Okay, so what was I talking about? let me give one more theorem here. Okay. See, where can I put it? Here's another theorem. So suppose AB is psi j of, or may say psi 1 of t. Okay? Suppose I'm taking some mapping with an invariant curve. Okay? Then, and suppose A, B is not already in some previous VJ. Okay, in other words, the VJs, you know, are telling you that, giving you a condition for your mapping to be an automorphism, and this number J, or this number N, is the condition for this thing to end up on P. Okay. So I'm saying that suppose it didn't end up earlier on P, so we're looking at this thing seriously, then AB is giving us an automorphism from VN exactly when chi n of t is 0. Okay? So this tells you that, this gives you a very curious connection. You have these interesting Solem polynomial, okay, chi n, and its zeros are characterizing precisely when you have parameters AB that correspond to an automorphism, okay? And the length of time it takes Q to land on P is exactly n. Okay? And so when I was saying about F being an automorphism with an invariant curve, what that means is that I'm looking at AB being exactly psi 1 of t, and for it to be an automorphism means it has to be a root of chi t. And that's why I was saying that the roots of chi t are either this, that, or that. Okay? So if I'm looking for automorphisms here, the things that I have going on P1, in other words, uniformizing my invariant curve, those things are exactly multiplications by one of these roots of that Solem polynomial. So we have this degree growth rate, and then we have all of its Galois conjugates, and that's what's happening. And let me just mention here, I was going to say something conjecturally. I can put it over here on the side. So conjecturally, okay, the number of points in Vn should be growing exponentially. Okay, so in other words, the number of automorphisms as you increase n, that, you know, conjecturally that really should be growing exponentially, but the number of automorphisms with invariant curves, okay, the number of automorphisms with invariant curves are exactly the solutions of this polynomial, which are not roots of unity. So I want to actually have these guys being roots of psi n of t. In other words, we want to have the things that are not the roots of unity. And so they're at most n of these guys, basically. I mean, our polynomial has got degree n plus 4. And so we're looking at basically n things, but this is probably like exponential. And so therefore, most most automorphisms in this family, Vn, have no. Tell me again. Oh, actually, I was telling about, a second, what's your question?
Sorry, you introduced another
concept. Please let me not, I accidentally jumped the gun on that one. Okay. I'm still back on the original first family. Okay. Yeah, sorry.
Actually, you have a heterogeneous surface, right? Because the image of psi 1 actually is the projective line. It's a rational thing. And then at every point there you have an F, which is also the image of P1. So actually you have a heterogeneous surface, so P1 bundle over P1.
Okay.
And does this N have anything to do with the Tristan or?
The N.
I'm trying to link up to some true thing that I know.
Okay. So the thing is, the things that are automorphisms. So I see. You're not thinking the automorphisms.
I'm thinking of the parameter space, the invariant curve. The totality of the invariant curve form a heterogeneous surface. The fibers are parameterized P1.
The
space also
parameter
P1 because even though the C will be solid. So the heterogeneous surface is interesting.
Yeah.
And there's a number.
Yeah, there'll be a number.
I just wonder whether it's anything to do with your characteristic function or whatever.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so because this in other words, here we have this this thing that's going to be the base of your Hirzebruch surface, and then for each n, you get some number of points, like n on, you know, something close to n points,
yeah.
And then you get just get a whole.
But then you have the different p1s parameterizing the actual system.
Yeah.
So what is the trick thing?
I don't know. But anyway, I don't think this.
Yeah.
That's what I don't think. Yeah. Okay, so now I actually have finished with this family here that I really like this family, and so it has an interesting for the ones that have invariant curves, it always has some sort of interesting dynamic. Either this fixed point FPS is the basin center of a basin that covers almost everything, or else it's the center of some kind of rotation domain. So curious. So. These, so I wanted to go to two different families of automorphisms. This family of automorphisms is very large for any k. If you choose k, you know, you've got a k minus one dimensional family of automorphisms that are moving smoothly. And as you change a, the x family xa changes smoothly. In other words, you're constructing these things by blow-ups, and as you change A, you move the point you're blowing up at. But so these things change smoothly, but they're in fact they're biholomorphically inequivalent. When A is near zero, you get things that are biholomorphically inequivalent. Let me describe a second. Okay, so let delta be a root of the polynomial 1 minus the summation j equals 1 to k x to the j plus x to the k. Okay, so I'm going to take a root of this. This is another Solem polynomial. This is another characteristic polynomial of some polynomial, some automorphism of a rational surface. So we start off with delta like this, and let h xy be y minus delta x plus cy plus 1 over y. Okay, and here c is like before, except c now is 2 square root of delta cosine of m pi over n. Square root of delta or 2 delta? Okay, thank you. So I'd like to discuss this family because this family is a little bit. So there are two in these two theorems. Sorry. I didn't have a conclusion to this theorem. Okay. Then H is an automorphism. Okay, of a new surface. A different surface y. Okay. So let me describe a little bit of what H is looking like on, you know, when. So I've given you some perhaps extremely random looking birational model, and I'm telling you that this birational model should give you an automorphism. So why? Well, so what is happening with this birational model? Well, off at infinity, we just have the linear part, okay? And the C is chosen such that you have a rotation of period n, okay? So when you look at, I'm now going to look at H on P2. So out here in P2, the line at infinity, I want to say here that h to the n on the line at infinity is the identity. Okay? And that's just the choice of c being cosine of m pi over n. That means that out at infinity we have something conjugate just to a rotation. What else? If I'm just looking at h by itself, I can look at the curve y equal to 0. Okay? I can look at this curve y equal to 0. And this will go to the point out at the end of the y-axis. Okay? Because the second coordinate gets large and the first coordinate just goes to 0.
Pi 1 k, the exponent is k plus 1?
No, just, k minus 1. Sorry. Okay. K. So this should be n, sorry. What am I doing here? So for any k, right, so for any k, this k looks like that k, but this k is just completely independent. Okay. Okay. So with this mapping, you can see that this curve that's the straight line that's the x-axis goes out to some point at infinity. And this mapping is, if you go to solve for the inverse looks essentially like the original mapping. And so the inverse would take the x-axis and blow it up to the point out at the end of the x-axis. Okay. So what happens, if I want to draw a picture here, is we have a thing of period n out here at infinity. So the nth iterate ends up over here at the end of the x-axis. And here I have a point of indeterminacy, and this point of indeterminacy blows up to the y-axis. Okay. And the reason why I'm optimistic that this can give me an automorphism is because I'm going to try going through the same procedure as we went through. Remember, what before we had this picture, and we blew up E1 and E2, and then we blew up the orbit of Q, and that gave us an automorphism. So we're in the business of trying to construct an automorphism by taking a birational model and then blowing up bad points. We're going to try to do the same thing here. And what do we do? Well, this is a little bit more singular. Okay, so when we're on the x-axis and we're going to infinity, it's more singular. So if we, let me draw the, so this is sigma naught, that's the line at infinity. And so we have n points to blow up. We have a point here, a point there, and then a point there. Okay. I'm thinking of these as being these different points. So you make one blow up, and to make things work, you have to actually make three blow ups. Okay. So you have a first fiber, a second fiber, and then a third fiber. You have to blow up at level three, and similarly over here you have, and then we keep coming until we have the same picture at all three cases. And what is our criterion for good luck, okay, for this thing to work, okay? In other words, what we have to do is we have a mapping that's taking this x-axis and squashing it down to this point at infinity. So we started off with something like this. And we have to blow up in the right way so that the blue, we know that we can stop blowing up here when we know that the blue then maps nicely to F3 in the sense that it's no longer, this blue line is no longer exceptional. Okay, after we've made three blow-ups, the blue line is no longer exceptional. Okay, now what are we going to have an automorphism? Well, we're going to, H inverse also has to be an automorphism. Okay, so the same procedure is going to have to make H inverse work. Okay, so there's a possible problem now. We have this blow-up procedure right here that was sort of uniquely determined, the unique thing that you have to do to make the blue line no longer be exceptional. Okay, now you have your mapping H. H is completely regular in a neighborhood of this, so it forces what this next picture has to be, and it forces what the next picture and the next picture, et cetera, have to be and it for, so once you've done over the blue point what you have to do so that this x-axis is no longer exceptional, your whole picture in the line at infinity is determined. Okay? Now you're either going to have an automorphism or you're not going to have an automorphism depending on what happens with H inverse. Okay? So the point is that H inverse has to line up exactly right. Okay? And that's the statement of the theorem, is if you blow up over the blue point and map forward, that fits fine with H inverse. Okay? Now, for that same reason, if you look at the first family up above, you see that you've got some linear portion plus a Laurent polynomial with only even powers. Okay? And the point is that if you look at the same process up above, if you had any odd powers, once you map across and you end up at the other side, things don't fit. Okay? So that's why you can only have even powers. Okay? So this is just a brief sort of explanation for how this procedure works. Now, sort of reminiscent of this previous discussion, the characteristic polynomial, let's see, is that my, yeah.
So when you finish this process, whether you get an automorphism or not, everything in the picture you drew up there is just one big invariant curve except for the third blow-up.
That's a good point here. Okay, so before we started, I guess brown is going to be the color of invariance. Before we started, this guy was invariant, okay? And then after the first blow-up, this guy is invariant. In other words, these three map cyclically. And the next fibers are also mapped to each other, but the F3 maps like this, but this guy doesn't come back to F3, it comes back to something else. It comes back to a different curve. So the point is, in this case, there are a lot of invariant curves, as opposed to this family where having an invariant curve is sort of special. So the characteristic polynomial of H star on Y is this polynomial chi. Okay. So let me point out here, so that this, I wrote down this mapping H. There are, so k can be any number starting with 4, okay? I mean, we want to, of course it can be any number, but starting with 1, I guess. But if starting with 4, you always have positive entropy, positive degree growth, exponential degree growth. So k is 1, Am I making a mistake? So we have k there, and then we also have the number n, okay? Thank you, right. K and n are the same. Sorry about that. Yeah. So here we have some choices. We have one of these things for each. So for each n, we have as many maps as we have roots here, and then we also have the choice of m. So this is sort of a infinite family here. And so this characteristic polynomial of this map, since this is an automorphism, this thing's a Salem polynomial. So all the roots, so we know that either delta is going to be the degree growth, the reciprocal of degree growth, or else delta equals 1. Okay. So we're either going to have something expanding, contracting, or rotational. Okay? And I'm saying expanding or contracting because the Jacobian determinant of this map is delta. Okay, so what can we say? What happens? So we can actually linearize our mapping in a neighborhood of sigma naught. So we can make a global linearization. Okay, so what is a neighborhood? I should put a little tilde on the sigma naught because now I'm up in the blow-up space. I started off being just the line at infinity, okay? And the normal bundle is just O of 1 as a line bundle. In other words, I remove the origin. I look at the normal bundle here and I have O of 1. And here I have n blow-ups. I've blown up n points on sigma naught. So I know then the normal bundle, the sigma naught tilde inside of my space Y is going to be O of 1 minus n. Okay, so I'm going to have some line bundle here that on this line bundle you can look at the mapping. My linear mapping is going to multiply the fiber by delta to the minus n over 2. Okay? And so I have some linear model. This is a global linear model. Okay? So I'm instead of looking at a fixed point, I'm looking along a whole fixed P1. And so the theorem is this. There exists a holomorphic mapping. There exists some neighborhood of the zero section inside this line bundle. And there exists a holomorphic mapping from omega into the space Y. And here we have the linear mapping. And here we have our mapping. Well, I want to say that sigma naught is going to be fixed here, so I wanted to say our linear model is actually describing h to the n. So in other words, we take the nth power and then we're fixing sigma naught, and so there exists omega, and so the point is here we have phi coming across, so phi composed with L is h to the n composed with phi. Okay, so there are two possibilities, or two qualitative phenomena here. One is that if delta is bigger than 1, in other words, when we're looking at the possible roots that we could have, it could be bigger than 1 and less than 1 is sort of the same, then sigma naught is attracting, so then there is a basin of attraction. There's a basin of attraction, and the volume of Y minus the basin is zero. So it's so the basin of attraction sort of occupies all of space volumetrically. So there's still some, it's not everything, but because of course on the complement of B you've got a mapping of positive entropy. Okay. And the other thing is that when modulus of delta is equal to 1, then what is this thing looking like? Well, I'm going to try to draw a picture someplace here. So we have our sigma naught, and the linearization gives me a whole, in other words, we're In the normal bundle here, we're just rotating things in the normal bundle, and that maps forward to a whole holomorphically varying family of Ziegle disks. So this gives you a whole open set, whole Fatou component that's rotating, and we sort of think of it as being a Ziegle log, sort of some kind of log that's just sort of turning here. So so you have some kind of rotation domain like that. So this is a, to my mind, these both are rather curious phenomena that appear inside of automorphisms. In other words, you can have a, back here with the, as usual, when you have something attracting, when you have a linearization in a neighborhood of the attractor, you can use the dynamics to expand it to the whole basin. Okay, so the whole basin actually is biholomorphically equivalent to this normal bundle. So this is the O of 1 minus N. So you know exactly what this is biholomorphically equivalent to. So this is something, strongly pseudo-convex here. Not C2, but some, for different ends, it's different things. And so you know what this is. We don't know what this is, but it's some big neighborhood of the line at infinity. And so, I think I'm close to out of time, so maybe I should stop.
Thank you very much. Are there questions about Jeff? We don't have a similar description of the basin for the other family. I realize that.
Well, when it's attracting, an attracting basin, when you have an automorphism, the attracting basin is always C2.
Birational map of P2 of the fifth
degree. Mm-hmm. Are the ones coming from that's one of these things that I would have, in a microsecond, I would have said, obviously they're not dense, but I certainly don't know how to prove it. I mean, the state of knowledge as of not very many years ago was that the question was, are there actually infinitely many? Mm-hmm.
Because after all, you construct them just by, blowing it up, blowing it down, etc. So you might expect that.
So, in other words, it's not clear when an automorphism is nearby, because you're saying blowing up and blowing down can take a very strange-looking map and make it suddenly very different-looking. Is that what you're meaning?
To me, it's not absurd that they are dense.
Well, I can make one kind of density statement, and that is, suppose we are looking at the... So I can make some statement about something being dense in something. So this is not exactly what you were asking for, but here we're looking at the mappings of this form that have invariant curves, and that's uniformized by C. So here's C with the parameter T. Now, if we look at the unit circle here, okay, the ones that are automorphisms are exactly the ones that are the roots of these Salem polynomials, and as n increases, they're dense in the unit circle. So if you look at that subspace, they're dense, but it's sort of a curious thing, because if you wanted to approach some limit that was not one of these particular Salem numbers, your degree would get larger and larger. And so the rational surface that you would need to make an automorphism would involve infinitely many blow-ups, but this kind of thing might be what you're talking about. In other words, you might have something that's a limit of automorphisms, and you just sort of, your surface gets more and more complicated, and then in the limit, it's just some birational map again. But my knee-jerk reaction is I'd be sort of surprised if they were actually dense. I mean, I'd be if they're dense, I'd be feeling like an idiot. I'd be feeling like an idiot because we've been working so hard to try to find them, and if they're dense and we have to work so hard to find them, So I feel like Homer Simpson then.
Okay, are there other questions or remarks? This is not the case, and thank you very much.